Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Raven's Real Spill. This is your girl, Raven the Serial Poet, coming to bring to y'all another night of entertainment. I first and foremost want to say I hope everybody is having a good day. I know I am having a blessed day. It has been nothing but up from here. I've been working on some things. As y'all already know, we talked about it in the shows prior. If you have not been keeping up with the 31 Days of Horror, you need to go listen to the playback, because this is day 26. If you have not listened to the other 25 shows before this show, you are definitely missing out on some entertainment. Now, has the prior shows been perfect? Absolutely not. It's been, you know what I'm saying, some technical difficulties here and there. But guess what? The show went on. We did what we had to do. It gave what it was supposed to give, and now we're here. So, before we get into tonight's show, I need for everybody to put the kids to bed. If you do not want to be up all night with them, talk about, Mommy, I hear something under my bed, blah, 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 blah. No, we're not dealing with that. So, put the kids to bed. Get you something to drink on. Get you something to smoke on. Pop you some popcorn or get you some chips and dip. Because tonight, you know what I'm saying, we're going to get into something a little different. Not too much different, but a little different. And we're going to have fun. So if you want to call in, the number is 914-205-5813. That number is 914-205-5813. If you're listening to the playback, you are the real MVP, and I appreciate you. Love you. Mwah. Chef kiss, you know what I'm saying? But I ain't gonna keep y'all. Let's get into these stories.
When I was 10 years old, I stayed at home by myself for the first time while my parents went out for a date. I was really into horror movies, so my imagination ran wild, so I had every light on in the house. I was scared, honestly, but not so much due to the lights. My parents told me they would be back by 10, so I wasn't really worried. I had food, Blockbuster movies to watch, and my favorite game, Manhunt, on my PS2. By the way, this was 2004. It started to get dark outside when all of a sudden a storm hit. Then the lights went out. As soon as it happened, I ran into our living room near the front of the house with my flashlight. I was definitely afraid now. I decided to get under the covers on the couch. I tried to fall asleep, but I was so afraid I couldn't. I don't know why, but I peeked out from under the covers, and I swear, I saw the silhouette of a man in the corner of the room. I jumped back under my covers, breathing heavily. Then all I heard was slow, methodical footsteps. They were coming toward me. Then I heard whispering along with the footsteps. My heart was pumping out of my chest at this point. Then the sound stopped. I just laid there frozen. No sound. Go! I got up and ran out of the house because it felt like someone touched my arm. And I know I heard someone yell the word go. I pretty much ran out of the house with the blanket over my head. I ran to my neighbor's house. I told them what happened and they called the cops from their cell phones. My parents arrived a little later than they expected due to bad traffic. They seemed angry about what happened. The police say that there was no evidence of a break-in. I still to this day remember that feeling of fear, but I really don't know if it were my imagination or not. This is a story that didn't happen to me. It happened to my dad. It's not a scary story about a creepy encounter with someone or anything paranormal. It's more of a close call kind of story. Anyway, in 2001, he was working for a big company, a good paying job. I'm not sure how long he worked there since I was 3 years old at the time. He got laid off on September 9th, 2001, 2 days before 9/11. On the morning of 9/11, he's still asleep and gets a call from my grandfather saying, "Those raghead terrorists, I'm going to kill all of them." He asked him why the hell he was yelling and cussing into the phone at 8 a.m. My grandfather tells him to turn on the TV and check out the news. Well, you know the rest. Two planes crash into the World Trade Center. This part I actually remember seeing on TV. Of course, being 3 years old, I had no idea what was going on. Now here's some creepy stuff for the story. After the towers collapse, my dad gets a call from his boss. He asks him, "James, what the hell just happened?" There was a loud explosion, and everyone started freaking out. "I'm still in the tower, and it's really dark in here." My dad tells him the towers are gone, they collapsed. I'm not really sure how their conversation went after this, but eventually his boss's phone cut off. He somehow survived the collapse by being trapped in an air bubble or something like that, I don't know. He got trapped under all the debris and was stuck in the air bubble. No idea how he got signal on his phone underneath all of that. His body was never found. Now the main reason I'm sharing this story is because a few years ago, my dad told me something that is chilling to think about. Right before he was laid off, he was scheduled to go to a meeting with his boss and some other people he worked with. The meeting took place on the 72nd floor of the North Tower. It was supposed to start exactly at 8 a.m. Coincidence or not, this is creepy. I'm glad he never went to go to that meeting. I only have a few early childhood memories from 2001, so I almost grew up without a father. Now it's just something our family talks about every now and then.
This just in, you were looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center. CNN Center right now is just beginning to work on this story, obviously calling our sources and trying to figure out exactly what happened, but clearly something relatively devastating happening this morning there. the south end of the island of Manhattan. That is, once again, a picture of one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
I'm 26 years old, and this story happened about 5 months ago. One night I woke up at around 1 a.m. and I couldn't go back to sleep. Usually when this happens, I go on my laptop and I go on social media or I watch YouTube. I got pretty bored after a while, and then remember my friend telling me about the deep web, and even worse, the dark web. I thought it's the perfect time to check it out. When I go on there, there's a lot of links to click on, such as live rape, illegal pornography, hitmen for hire, human body parts for sale, torture, all kinds of stuff. I clicked one link that said home invasion live stream. The first thing I saw upon clicking was a man filming himself. He was wearing a clown mask and held up a large knife imitating slicing his own throat. He then turned the camera around to film a window that was slightly open. He took his shoes off and slowly slid the window open and climbed inside. You could see him sneaking upstairs. He entered the bathroom where he made a small cut on his arm with the knife he was carrying. He got all the toothbrushes and rubbed them in his open wound and put them back how he found them. I didn't really feel comfortable watching this. But after seeing that, I was disgusted. I couldn't click away. I was too enticed by this and what he was doing, so I kept watching. He then opened the door to a bedroom where a man and a woman were sleeping. He leaned over to the man, put his hands right next to his face, almost touching him. Then the same again with the blade that he was carrying. He pressed the knife right up to his throat, almost making contact. The masked man then went and stood right next to the woman on her side of the bed and stood there just staring at her, just watching her breathe as she slept. After just standing there, he pulled something out of his pocket and placed it next to the woman's pillow. I couldn't see what it was, but then he zoomed in. It was a note with the words, "I could have raped and killed your whole family," written on it. He then snuck out of the bedroom, and I said out loud, "This guy is so fucked up." He paused, and he turned the camera on to himself and just stared at it. I thought, that's weird. It's like he heard me say that. He was still staring at the camera, in fact. It was like he was staring at me. After a short pause, he carried on sneaking around downstairs and quietly climbed out the window. And the stream ended. At that point, I also had enough for one night and decided to try and sleep. I never told anyone that I went on the deep web. And about 3 weeks after watching that live stream, I woke up one morning to see a note next to my pillow, and it read, "So who's fucked up now?" Yeah, I was scared, but I didn't tell anybody because it sounds fake. But I tell you what, I will never go back on the deep or the dark web again. This story happened to me on my first day of high school. I remember walking down my street in the morning toward the bus stop. There were a few other kids that stood next to me talking. There was also a man who definitely didn't belong at a high school bus stop. He was tall, had a shaved head, a mustache, and a white tank top on. I thought he looked weird and out of place, but I really didn't give it a second thought. My first day of high school actually went fine. It was on the way home where it all went wrong. I got on the school bus, and as I was walking to find my seat, I saw the same man from this morning sat on the back of the bus. This time, he was staring right at me. I didn't know then, and I still don't know now, how this guy even got on the bus in the first place. The house I lived in was one of the last stops, so by the time my stop arrived, most of the kids have gotten off the bus, and the bus was empty. I could just feel that guy staring at me the whole bus ride home. though I didn't dare to look behind me and check. When my stop finally arrived, I got off and I started walking. And of course that creepy man got off and started following me. I started walking faster. And as I did, the man got faster. And that continued right down my street. The faster I walked, the faster he would. It got to the point where I needed to start running. Thankfully, my house was close by. I ran by my house and slammed the door shut. And I looked through the kitchen window to see if the man was still chasing me. He was walking past my house like nothing ever happened while staring at me. Later that night, I was upstairs in my bedroom when someone knocked at the door, the downstairs door. The next thing I heard was my mom calling me downstairs. When I get there, my mom is looking confused and checking around outside. I say to her, "Yeah, Mom?" She said, "That's weird. There was a man just here asking to speak to you." I asked what he looked like, and she described the same man who chased me home earlier that day. I told my mom about what happened, and how I was pretty sure it was the same guy who knocked at the door. My mother told the police and our school. And actually, this wasn't the first time they have heard reports of this. The school and the police said they had several reports of the man stalking their children. From what I know, he was never caught. Who knows what he could be doing right now? Just be careful.
This happened a while ago. Me and my brother, Ron, were in my room watching football, screaming at the screen when our team would do something idiotic. We were about 40 minutes into the game. Ron slammed his fist into the remote, turning the television off by accident. I turned the TV back on, and as the screen loaded back up, we heard footsteps coming from downstairs. Ron and I quickly turned our heads to the bedroom door. I turned down the volume to hear the noises clearer. "I think someone's inside," Ron said. I could hear the shudder in his voice. He was anxious. "No, it's probably just the dog," I responded. Ron, however, was a lot more cautious. He walked over to the bedroom door and locked it. The click it made alerted the intruder. We heard even more footsteps. Ron then whispered, "That's not the dog." Ron, acting nervous, put me on edge, so I agreed with him and turned off the bedroom lights. Ron then looked around the room, trying to find some sort of object we could use as a weapon. I sat next to the door, with my ear placed on our wall. They were so thin that if there was someone inside the house, I would be able to hear them. Nothing happened at first. It was just dead silence. "Take a look," Ron said. He had his phone turned on in case we needed to call the police. I lay on my chest and looked through the gap under the bedroom door. I saw blackness, but I could barely make out a pair of boots standing a little ways down the upstairs hall. I felt both hands shaking as I pushed myself back up to my feet. I tiptoed over to Ron, who was waiting anxiously for the answer. "Someone's here," I whispered as low as I could. Ron's face went pale as he stared into nothingness. At one point, I thought he was going to black out on me. I pulled Ron over to our window. I quietly opened the window and looked down at the grass, two stories below my current position. Ron was still in a different world, as if he was blocking himself out from reality, leaving the responsibility to me. I tried not to pay much attention to him and instead focused on escaping. I took Ron's phone out of his hand as he crouched on the carpet. He had installed one of those apps where specific fingerprints can enter the phone. I took his hand, which was shockingly freezing, and held his index finger on the phone screen. I jumped out of my skin when the phone let out a loud beep, and all of a sudden, I could hear footsteps running straight to the bedroom door. I quickly typed in 911 and put one leg out of the window. I heard loud banging on the bedroom door and shouting,
"I'm going to kill you."
I landed on the porch roof and shouted at Ron to snap back into action. Ron stood up quickly and stumbled outside of the window. He landed on the roof beside me as I forced the window shut again. "We need to jump," I said. I could hear faint thumping behind the walls. The intruder was struggling to get inside our room. I jumped off the porch roof and sprained my ankle. Ron was wobbling on the edge of the roof. Quick, I said. I avoided shouting, as whoever the intruder was would have known that we were outside. Ron touched his chest, head, right shoulder, and left shoulder, making a cross before he jumped. We were a good 6 blocks away before I realized that I had left my dog behind. I burst into tears from fear of what just happened and worrying if my dog was hurt. I talked to the police operator as both me and Ron slowly walked back to the house. We heard sirens and I felt the weight lift off our shoulders. As we approached our house, we noticed that the police were now outside. Me and Ron hid beside our porch. Both of us were waiting to come face to face with the intruder. 4 cops came out, but there was no man, and one of them was holding my dog, Lewis. I hugged him and apologized to him for leaving him behind. The cops explained that there was no one inside, and there was nothing stolen either. In fact, they explained that there was nothing to even prove that someone had invaded our property. They never found him. Ron installed some CCTV cameras in both of our houses, but I can assure you, I haven't had a good night's sleep since.
I posted this in a comment in another post, and another user suggested I share it here. So why not? So I've been on Grindr for about 10 years, 5 of which were legal. I'm not proud of it, and had plenty of messed up experiences. This one in particular reminds me of when I was at a party without my car. I was 19, in college, and my phone was at 10%, but a decently hot Grindr guy said he could pick me up, and we could hang out at his place before he drove me home. So of course I jumped on the opportunity. Anyway, we got to his place, and he got me pretty drunk, which isn't usual for me, but never tried to make a move. I assumed he was going to wait and just convince me to stay the night later on. Finally, my phone died after about 2 hours. The last 1% lasted a lot longer than the rest. And I didn't even have to say anything before he noticed it was dead. Then he stood up and was like, "Well, let's go to the car then." When I asked him if he had a charger that I could use, he just said, "No." After we got in the car, he got kind of quiet and less flirty, and I spaced out, just enjoying his music and looking out the window. I didn't even notice that he never asked me where I lived until I realized we'd been driving for over an hour, not even towards my town, but into the canyons of Greater Salt Lake City. I asked him where we were going, and he just said, "Thought we could just go for a drive." And my drunk ass was like, "Oh, okay." So anyway, to make a long story shorter, he ended up taking us about 4 or 5 miles down a dirt road with no signs or houses until it dead-ended into this cabin with no lights on or cars outside, and he just parked and turned off his car. That's when the dread started to creep in as I sobered up. I said I drank too much and I should probably head home, but he didn't even respond. He just sat there staring at the cabin. Then he was like, "You said you like to be kinky. You're pretty submissive, correct?" And I was like, sure, but I just meant like normal rough kind of stuff. Nothing wild." And he started to sound a little annoyed, and his sentences seemed a little less carefully worded, like he was spitting out the bare minimum effort in each thought. He said something about some of his favorite people are those who can find pleasure in pain. And if someone goes into shock enough times, eventually it becomes a drug, and they crave it more. And then something about pushing a person into the deep end is the fastest way to teach them how to swim. At that point, I was scared enough to assert myself, and said firmly, "Okay, well, that sounds fun, but just not tonight. I just want to go home now. This place is creepy." And he just sighed and gripped his keys tighter. Then right as I glanced at his phone sitting in the cup holder, right before it occurred to me to grab it, he snatches it up so fast and held it in his left hand, kind of like behind his head, making it clear that I wasn't going to go near it. I made this kind of, "What?" sound, and he just gave me this almost, "I'm proud of you, son," half smile, like dads do when they pat your shoulder or something. It was quiet, and he kept looking me up and down for a minute or so, then got a little bit more gruff and said, "Let's go inside." I have these friends you'll really like once you meet them. You'll feel a lot better. Or something to that extent. But he wasn't even trying to sound genuine or comforting like he had been doing so well earlier that night. Finally, I lied and spoke up a bit and told him, I told my roommates and my friends I was meeting up with you before you picked me up. I sent screenshots of your face and some on the convo. They're going to freak out if I don't charge my phone and reply to them in the next few hours. I try not to make it sound accusatory, but more like I was just worried that my friends would go crazy. But it was clear he knew what I was implying. At that point, he let out an exasperated, grunty sigh and started the car and we drove away. He kept his headlights off all the way back down the dirt road for some reason. Driving back, I got nervous about him stalking me or coming after me in the future, so I tried to apologize and tell him I was down to hang out another time, but tonight was just not feeling great for me, blah blah blah. He didn't say a single word to me the whole drive back. He didn't ask me where I lived, and I didn't intend to tell him either. But he dropped me off at a McDonald's about 40 miles away from my apartment, and when I was stepping out, he suddenly leaned over and gave me a hard shove, so I almost fell out the rest of the way. He grabbed my backpack off the floor and flung it out his window across the parking lot and peeled out with the passenger door still open. He broke my laptop and cracked my phone, and I had to ask a stranger to use their charger and call an Uber. But at this point, I was just so anxious to get home, I didn't really give a crap. What's so weird is how, while this was happening, even though I was terrified, I guess I wasn't thinking about exactly what he was planning to do with me. I just knew I needed to get away. So it wasn't until I got home and got in the shower that I realized how messed up it was, and what might have happened if I let him walk me into the cabin. I remember just being so shaken and smacked by the reality of it. Almost felt like a panic attack. So I sat down in the shower with my head between my knees and cried till the water ran cold, and I got out and woke up my roommate. I told him about it and he kind of calmed me down. So while I still have a Grindr account, I really just use it for an ego boost. I'm reluctant to meet up with anyone from it now. Anyway, girls and guys, I suppose the moral of the story is, we gotta be careful.
I don't know what had me fooling around with illegal stuff like the deep web, but I heard that it was a place where stuff the normal internet didn't have was stored and viewed. Immediately I got interested and asked my friend how I may access the deep web. He wrote me down the instructions. After a while, I decided it was time to go home. When I got home, I looked at the card he wrote the instructions on. It said I needed a browser called Tor to access it. Needless to say, I got the search engine and read on. Next, it said I needed to find a page called Hidden Wiki. After a while of searching, I found it. I saw a bunch of nameless links. In the hidden wiki, links are given without a name or description. People can only find out what's inside a link by clicking on it. After numerous sites filled with child porn, drugs, and hitman for hire, I came across a link I have yet to discover. I click on it to see a video. I pressed play. I saw nothing but a wall. I stared at it for a few minutes. Just as I was about to exit, something was emerging through the wall. I waited and watched longer to discover it was a man with a mask. "Hey there," he said, thinking this was a prank video. I just kept watching. After a while of me just staring at the screen, he began to speak again. "Aren't you going to speak?" he asked. I proceeded to type on the keyboard. "Not the keyboard. Speak," he said. At this point, I was a bit frightened. "Who are you?" I asked. "I'm your friend," he proceeded to say. At this point, I'm scared. My face is full of terror. I begin to start showing my fright. "Come on, friend. Don't give me that scared face," he said. This is when I got extremely frightened. "Just 1 second, my friend. I will get your address so I can talk to you in real life," he proceeded to type on his computer. Frantic, I tried to close the window down and get out of the video. "That won't work," he said. Before he had time to track my address, I got a screwdriver, removed the back and battery from my laptop. "It's been some time now, and he hasn't come. He didn't have enough time to get my address. Or did he?"
It was late December in a small Texas town. We just received 5 inches of snow earlier in the day. I can't remember what time it was. All I remember is that it was dark out, and I was playing in my room. It's important to note that my room was made up of 2 rooms, a mud room with a door leading to out front, then my actual bedroom. The door was an older style wood door with all the old hardware and had a window on the top half. It had a window shade, but that wouldn't stop anyone from looking in if they wanted. My room was the frontmost, with my parents' room being in the back of the house. I was in my mud room, playing with my Hot Wheels when I felt something weird, like someone was watching me. I was facing the door at this point and looked right up at the window. I was trying to focus on the little openings left by the window shade. I stared, looking for any reason to feel unsafe and run. After a while, I was sure there was nothing, so I went back to playing. A few minutes later, I got the feeling again. This time, I didn't look at the door, but instead moved to where my back was now to the door. I was just hoping that it was all in my head. Just then, the most terrifying thing happened. There was a noise at the door, like the doorknob had been touched. I was still turned around, back facing the door. I was completely frozen at the metal-on-metal sound of the doorknob. It was moving. I didn't know how or why, but it was moving, slowly turning, testing the lock. I wanted to move, but I was frozen. It was like someone glued every joint in my body. My chest felt like a car was parked on it. My parents had been in the shower all the way at the back of the house, leaving me at the front all alone, with the only room lit up being mine. Suddenly, the knob was not being gently moved. Someone was turning it with force. This door was one that had to be locked with a skeleton key, so the knob could turn and open freely. Luckily, there was 2 deadbolts. Whoever was on the other side just figured out the knob was free to open. As soon as I heard the knob turn all the way, I sprung up to the door about 5 feet, my back to the wall. The door fell silent. I found myself glued to the wall, unable to move. Then, the knob turned slowly, I remember watching, waiting for it to turn all the way. When it did, whoever was on the other side started trying to budge the door and pry at it. First, it was easy going, but then they started pounding into the door with their foot. They got only 2 kicks in when I unfroze and screamed for my life. I sprinted to the back of the house to get my parents. They asked what was wrong and I said someone tried to break in. They ran and checked, not bothering to look outside, which I pleaded them to go check outside. They just said my imagination was running wild, and it was with an animal or the old age of the house. They took one final look in my mudroom, not bothering to investigate any further. I was told to go to bed. It took me hours. I don't even remember falling asleep. All I remember is staring at the door from my bed, never taking my eyes off the doorknob. Suddenly, I was woken up by my parents, who were obviously distressed and seemed to be scared. My mom grabbed me by both shoulders and got right in front of me. She asked me very sternly why I thought someone tried to break in. When I told them this time, they seemed to listen. I was worried how serious they were as they asked me about everything. When I was done, they said they had to show me something. They took me to the front door and out to the front yard and pointed to my door near the driveway. You could clearly see the boot prints in the snow, walking along the street through our yard and straight to my window, then my mudroom door, where I had been playing the night prior. The police showed up and took a report, but nothing ever came of it. I was never able to sleep well in that house. I can never forget what it felt like as a child to go through this, and to not have my parents believe me. I'm just glad I was not home alone, and very thankful for those deadbolts.
I was 24 years old when this happened, and I'd recently started my first job as an Uber driver. Being an Uber driver was easy for the most part, but you'd eventually get to a point where you were tired of constantly picking up people and putting a fortune's worth of gas in your car. It would have been great if Uber paid for the driver's expenses, but we were independent contractors under their platform, so we had to pay for gas. The pay was okay for the most part, but you might as well consider Uber as a side job to earn a little extra cash on the side. I'd mainly do Uber during the night as I'm a full-time college student with bills to pay, so it wasn't all fun and games. Anyway, I'd constantly be picking up people everywhere in my city. I picked up motorists, people from parties or nightclubs, and you'd sometimes get your occasional creeps who'd stare at you for no apparent reason. However, there was this one woman who I picked up that really gave me second thoughts about working for Uber. It was a Wednesday, I believe, and I was driving around waiting for someone to request me for a ride. A few minutes went by, and I got a notification from Uber letting me know that someone had requested me. I eventually pulled up to a woman who looked to be in her mid-30s. Just by looking at her, I could tell that something seemed off about her. She wore some jeans and had a black t-shirt that had holes all over it. Her hair was a mess, and I could make out what looked to be faint marks on her. She went over to my car and asked in a soft tone if I was her Uber driver. I told her yes and to hop in the back. As soon as she did, she kept on giving me this stare, as if she seemed upset about something. Like I said before, you'd occasionally have some creeps, so in my mind, I thought she was one of them. She told me the address, and we went on our way. I then began to notice that she kept looking around my car for no apparent reason, as if she were looking for something. I keep all of my valuables with me at all times, and the valuables that I do have in the car were all kept safe in the glove compartment. She kept looking around while fidgeting with her fingers, like she was anxious. Whenever I'd asked if she was okay, she'd immediately stop and raise her voice to tell me that everything was fine. Not in a rude way, just a formal way. Out of nowhere, she kept on saying things to herself, repeating them over and over again. I assumed that she had some sort of mental disorder, so I tried to be respectful and mind my own business. But that all changed when she started screaming at the top of her lungs. She began hitting me, grabbing my shirt, trying to scratch me, and doing anything she could to cause harm to me. I told her that she was done and ordered her to get out of my car before I called the police. She started to cry and sob and began to apologize, telling me not to kick her out. Even though I felt somewhat bad, I still couldn't chance it because I knew that she was going to end up doing it again. She got out of my car and I sped off and reported the incident to Uber, and I don't know what they did after that. All I could say is, that woman is mentally insane.
Back in May of 2010, while in desperate need of cash, I agreed to house sit for one of my old high school teachers. He had contacted me via Facebook and asked me if I would be willing to water his plants, collect his mail, and clean up the place while he went out of town for a couple of days. He didn't specify where he was going, but he agreed to pay me $400 for 2.5 days, with half up front, so I agreed. I never really liked him in high school. He was teaching classic literature, and he always seemed to enjoy pointing out any illustrations that in any way featured nudity. His eyes always seemed hungry, and he tended to wheeze like he was out of breath, even though he was kind of a small guy. My friends and I used to refer to him as Mr. Lip Tit. When I arrived at his place, the key was beneath the mat, and $200 were in an envelope on the kitchen table. I turned on my music, watered the plants, cleaned and vacuumed the ground floor, and made myself dinner. I found his house to be extremely boring. It was filled with old books, stacks of newspapers, and ancient-looking furniture that didn't really look comfortable to sit in. I settled into my sleeping bag on the guest bed, but I had a hard time staying asleep. It seemed that every 5 minutes there was another strange noise coming from the house, and it would put me on edge. The following morning, I went back to my own house, had breakfast and took a shower before coming back and cleaning the second floor. Upon entering the guest bedroom, there was the faint smell of something in the air that definitely had not been there before. And what's more, I could have sworn that my sleeping bag was in a slightly different position when I had left it that morning. I started getting a bad vibe. I decided that night that I would sleep downstairs in the living room. I finished cleaning just after 10 p.m., I made some popcorn and enjoyed some cable TV, which I didn't have at my place. Around 11, I shut off the TV, wrapped myself up in my sleeping bag, and tried to drift off. I was tossing and turning for a bit, and just as I began to doze off, there came a click of the doorknob turning in the other room. I glanced over, and I swear by any god you choose, Mr. Liptek emerged from the pantry wearing only his socks. He then slowly turned the corner and made his way upstairs. I grabbed my phone and my keys and exited out. I ran around front to get into my car and sped home, where I immediately called the cops. I didn't know exactly how to explain the situation to them. I mean, he wasn't breaking and entering. It was his house. But when I explained to the operator that he had deceived me into thinking that he was gone, they sent out a patrol car. I had to collect the stuff that I had left at his house anyway. When the police arrived, Mr. Liptek answered the door wearing my sleeping bag over his shoulders. The police discovered a butler's cupboard, which was a secret room in the pantry that I wasn't aware of, where he had been hiding with a digital camera. He had taken a few dozen photos of me all around the house, most of which when I was sleeping. I showed the police the Facebook messages he sent me, assuring me that he would be out of town, and they arrested him. I collected all my remaining stuff, but left the sleeping bag. I didn't waste any time getting a restraining order against him. Mr. Liptek made bail, but actually died of a heart attack a few weeks later, after being rear-ended in his car at a stoplight. I never got the rest of my money.
Back when I was 17, I used to babysit for our neighbor, who at the time was a single mother who happened to be going through a particularly nasty divorce. She had two young sons, one of which was 8 years old, while the other was only around 18 months. They were absolutely adorable and very well-behaved kids, but you could tell that they were going through a lot, and the older one definitely showed signs of stress over the whole thing. And I'll never forget the time he asked me why his daddy couldn't live with them anymore, and it honestly broke my heart. Not because I didn't have an answer for him, but because to hear it would have just been too much to bear, too much for anyone to bear. Anyway, after a few months of being alone, she finally decided to get back on the old dating horse. I was so happy for her. After such a rough time, she deserved to find happiness again, to find someone who had the wherewithal to be a real father to these two adorable little boys. So one night, she leaves on her date and says she'll be back around midnight and not a moment later. Only, she doesn't tell me exactly where she's going, and I have no way to contact her because this was back in the 80s and no one had a cell phone. Well, they did exist, but not in the available commercial sense. It was all landlines back then. Otherwise, this might not have gone the way it did. So on the night in question, I'm chilling on the couch, absent-mindedly flicking through the TV channels. I put the kids to bed an hour previous, they're sleeping like rocks, and everything seems fine and dandy. When suddenly there's a knock at the front door. I wasn't expecting anyone, but then again, it wasn't my house, so I felt kind of obligated to answer and take a message or whatever. Only as I started walking down the hallway towards the front door, whoever is on the other side starts banging against it and cursing up a storm.
Cheryl, I know you're in there. Open the door.
Now what was exactly said, I don't remember, but I'm not keen on repeating some of the words they used. It was really, really harsh. So I'm just frozen, looking at the door in total fright when the oldest boy came flying out of his room and down the stairs, running to the door and yelling, "Daddy's home!" I pull him away from the door. I had no idea what this guy's intentions were, and after all, they were probably divorced for a freaking reason. But I almost fainted with fear when I hear the words,
"I got my shotgun in my truck, and tonight I'm going to teach you a lesson you'll never forget."
He screams this, but then I hear his footsteps move up the gravel path. It appeared he wasn't bluffing at all. And if that was the case, then our lives were clearly in danger. When he gets back, he's banging on the door and threatening to start shooting through it if no one opens. I grab both kids and run out the back door and across the street to my house where my mom calls the police. When the police arrive a few minutes later, they actually find the ex-husband taking a massive dump on Cheryl's porch. He was arrested, and I wait with the kids at my house for their mom to show up. Everyone was in tears by that point, even my mom, who was normally a pretty reserved woman. I mean, maybe he was just having a manic episode and no one was in real danger, but honestly, it was one of the most terrifying nights of my entire life. So this is the story of the worst day of my entire life so far. I was just 15 at the time, babysitting my little sister who was a toddler, like about that kind of age where she could walk and open doors. My parents were making a quick run to the store and left me in charge. I was chilling in the TV room. Sis was in her bedroom playing with her dolls or whatever. After a few minutes of watching TV, I noticed it was a little too quiet. I checked a room and she wasn't there. I checked everywhere else with growing alarm, looking and calling for her, but she was nowhere to be found. To my absolute horror, I realized the person I'm supposed to be babysitting is definitely no longer in the house. There was this kid's swing park across the street that she liked, and this wouldn't be the first time that she worked the doorknob successfully and toddled over to play there by herself. So I sprinted over there to look for her, running on pure adrenaline and panic. But there was still no sign of her. I spotted a group of three grade schoolers there, so I described her and asked them if they had seen her around. One of the boys told me he saw a girl matching her description get into a blue car. We don't own a blue car, nor do any of the family friends. I can't adequately describe the feeling of dread, panic, and hopelessness that completely overwhelmed me. It was kind of feeling like my heart actually fell out of my chest. I sprinted from one end of the block to the other, hoping to catch a glimpse of this blue car. I ran through and around the adjoining elementary school, hoping maybe she was there. Never mind that I'd already been told that she had gotten into a stranger's car. I was completely irrational, was hoping that I had misheard that kid or something, or maybe, please, God, she was back. After some kind of eternity, I ran back home to call 911. By this time, my parents were back, and lo and behold, my sister was with them. It turns out she did open the door and wander off, but only to the store and back. A stranger had asked her where she lived and then walked her straight back to her house since it was obviously dangerous for her to be out alone. In my panic, I'd completely missed her coming home, and I was furious as to why my parents didn't think to notify me, so I guess it ended okay. I locked myself in the bathroom and sobbed for a while. Then I was overcome by an overwhelming urge to punch this little turd who had lied to me. I bolted back to the playground with no clear plan in mind. He wasn't there when I got back. I suppose that's good because I was sufficiently older, bigger, and utterly blind with rage that I probably would have murdered him at that point. An apology, however physically coerced, would have been nice, though. Oh, and I'm fairly certain the boy wasn't just mistaken. After all was said and done, I recalled that one of the kids and his little group of friends had started to chime up when she saw me running around in a panic. I just vaguely remember her saying something like, "Hey, mister, you should know about your sister." Something in the tone of her voice was apologetic, like she realized how messed up their joke was. I was completely irrational at that point and ran off to keep searching, and it failed to register until later. Point being, there's a reason why the front page of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy says, "Don't panic." Never truer a word said. So this story isn't about me babysitting, but rather a close relative babysitting me and my sister when we were much younger. My parents told us the story when we grew up, and honestly, this has to be one of the last things any babysitter would want to happen to them or anyone in their guardianship. We wince every single time they retell it, and I'm guessing you will too. My parents had decided that they were going to have a little date night for the wedding anniversary and called up a family member to see if they would babysit us for the evening. She adored babies and would always play with us when she would occasionally visit, so she must have appeared to be the best person for the job. Although by the end of this, you might well dispute that idea rather violently. My parents were in the living room getting ready to leave for the night, and we were in our room playing with her. After a little while, she starts throwing me up and down in the air in that playful way that grown-ups do with kids sometimes. Apparently our dad happened to notice this and warned her to be extremely careful since the ceiling fan was at full blast, but decided she was aware and responsible, so he just headed back to the living room to carry on getting changed. After a few more playful tosses in the air, she put me down and started to do the same thing with my sister. Except, she wasn't quite as lucky. According to my dad, no more than like 30 seconds had gone by when a loud gasp, followed by a blood-curdling scream, echoed all around the house. My parents came rushing to the room, and what they witnessed was something my mom has never, ever been able to get out of her head. She just stood there in shock for a moment, surveying the pure horror of the scene before her. Our babysitter had accidentally tossed my sister into the fan while it was still on, and it wasn't one of those flimsy, cheapo ceiling fans that you can pick up from a Walmart. It was one of those solidly built, steel blade fans, built with safety features, sure, but still super heavy. Also, the fan setting was thankfully not set to high, but only to medium. God knows what the damage would have been if it was. And the way my mom tells the story, for the first few moments after walking into the bedroom, she thought my sister was dead. Blood was splattered all over the wallpaper, almost as if someone had been brutally beaten. My sister was on her bed's blood-soaked sheets with a huge gash on her forehead, and you can only imagine what kind of horror was going through our babysitter's mind. An ambulance quickly came to get her cleaned up and was given a lot of stitches in her forehead.
My parents were more than relieved the blades didn't strike an eye, that she actually only managed to pick up superficial injuries. The babysitter didn't come around after that, even though everyone got over it pretty quickly since it was an accident. She still has the scar on her forehead today. We would joke around about the scar and how it was actually my plan to take her out to be an only child, or how she got her scar wrong and it's supposed to zigzag like Harry Potter's lightning bolt scar. I suppose, at best, it's an interesting story to tell if anyone asks her about the faint scar on her forehead. I work at a local Burger King in my city in Ohio. A few nights ago, I was working the closing shift, which is 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. It's a shorter shift, but it's the heaviest one of the day. And not just because it's busy, because all the weirdos seem to come out after the sun goes down. And this right here is the story of the most bizarrely disturbing encounter I've ever had while working in that Ohio Burger King. So, it must have been only like half an hour until closing, and round about this time the throngs of late-night diners start to kind of peter out, allowing us to close a few booths and generally get a head start on clean down before actually closing. The restaurant is getting quieter and quieter, and as time goes on, it actually seems like we might be able to get out of that place at a reasonable hour, which obviously we're all excited about. You see, we didn't get any overtime there, and they'd only pay us for 15 minutes after closing. The idea being to keep us from slacking and earning a few extra bucks in the makeup work after hours. So as I was saying, it's about half an hour from closing when I see a guy start walking towards the clear glass doors. They're double doors too, so picture the scene as he opens one door, uses the little hook to keep it open, then does the same with the other door so that both sets of doors are wide open, like he's ready for an entire mob of people to start walking through the entrance. But instead of an entire mob of people, there came only one. Although I'm guessing she weighed about as much as three or four other people. This woman was in a mobility scooter, or more accurately, spilling out from over a mobility scooter. I really don't mean to be cruel here, but she was disgusting, objectively disgusting. She couldn't have weighed any pound less than 600, and her size was such that she actually needed an oxygen tank attached to her scooter, a clear plastic line running from it up into her nostrils. She scoots her way to the counter with her man and proceeds to just smile at him while he orders something for her. Something being the single biggest order I'd ever taken down in the entire time I've worked there. And I'm talking even more than the frat boys who come in drunk one Saturday night. The order came to just shy of $150 and took about 20 minutes to prepare. Keep in mind that the average serving time in our restaurant at that period was like 6 minutes. 6 minutes for an entire bag of meals, and this order took 20, with every member of our staff preparing it. When it was done, the worst part commenced. She scooted herself over to a table with her man, who then proceeded to feed her pretty much the entire order in the space of about 10 minutes. It was absolutely disgusting. But honestly, I couldn't decide if it was worse that we were bearing witness to that whole thing, or that the guy seemed to take immense pleasure in making a freaking mess while he was feeding her. By the time they left, there were fries and ranch dressing everywhere, all over the floor. Tons of fries had been, like, crushed underfoot in that way that you have to really scrub to get them up. The whole thing added a bunch of extra time to our cleanup. But that's not the thing that scared me. It's how into the whole feeding thing they were. How the woman was hurtling towards an early grave and seemed to be loving it. A wild thing happened to my girlfriend and I at Burger King a couple of weeks ago. We ordered a bunch of food, got our drinks, and sat down at a table near the corner of the restaurant. A minute after we ordered, a guy goes up to the counter and orders. He wasn't out of place, so I didn't notice anything about him for a few minutes. He sits down where you typically would sit if you were waiting for a to-go order, and the first thing that got our attention was a kid,
maybe 8 or 9 years old, ran past him. He loudly says,
"Atheist!"
at the kid in an accusing tone. He then was milling about, talking in a radio-like box about how he needed to move to the North Pole. It was seconds after this that I noticed that he was staring at us. As I made brief eye contact with him several times to check that he was indeed staring, he then walked over and sat at a table right next to my girlfriend and I. Great, I thought. He then starts babbling to some imaginary person, saying,
"I don't know. I don't know."
Homeless and mentally ill are common in this area, especially this side of town, so we are on edge but not surprised at his behavior. The lady working calls for Order 179. The guy says,
"They were before me,"
motioning to us, since he apparently forgot his number. The lady said,
"Two cheeseburgers."
And he again insisted it might be our food. By this time I realized what was happening, and I said,
"Oh yeah, we are 178.
At this point he snapped and totally lost it on me.
"You Californians need to learn to open your mouths."
As he grabbed his food and began walking in my direction to the exit, I mustered up what fight-or-flight response I had in the moment to say,
"Have a nice day. See ya."
As he approached the door, and crazy guy continues to cuss at me, calling me names. A few words were exchanged, but I made sure to stand my ground but not say anything off-color as he made his way out. As he left, he apparently continued to scream at us through the window. All employees and customers in that place were looking at me in shock, and I was shocked too. The part that bothers me about this interaction is that in the moment, as he walked past me, I saw in his eyes how removed from reality he was, whether that be because of drugs or mental illness or a combination of both. He was also much larger than me, so if he wanted to hurt me or my girlfriend, he likely could have. Needless to say, every time I go to that Burger King from now on, I make sure I scope out the area before going in. I've been pretty heavily involved in various fast food jobs since I was old enough to work, and I am now a manager down here in Florida. We experience a fair share of problems on a daily basis, but the worst has to be people who are using or addicted to drugs. They're everywhere in our industry. I mean it. The fun never stops for fast food workers. I have seen deals in the back of the kitchen, in the parking lot, in the bathroom, or walk-in. It used to be worse before my time, apparently, but honestly, I find that pretty hard to believe. My boyfriend of 10 years, who is way higher up the management chain than me, told me in the old days they would all hang out in employee parking even if it wasn't their shift and just everyone would constantly switch cars while doing various substances. The first week I became a deputy manager, I had to cuss an employee out when she came in to work high on crystal. Not about her coming in on meth, for not doing any work. My boyfriend also tells me he came in and worked in the kitchen for a bit when it wasn't even his shift because he was rolling. Lastly, to this day, 90% of the employees come in with eyes redder than Satan's wiener. I used to be one of them, but a higher-up singled me out, and now I don't do it to spite them. This is most fast-food places, but nothing can prepare you for walking into a bathroom to do a routine check and seeing a person's leg sticking out from under the stall. I remember being super tired that day. Just one of those shifts you're just trying to make it through instead of actually putting in any real work. I lazily grabbed the cleaning supplies from the cleaning closet, wandered into the woman's bathroom with my pen in hand, ready to sign my initials on the sheet to show we were being diligent and all that stuff. I straight up dropped the pen when I saw that girl's legs sticking out from under the stall, then ran. I mean ran back to the manager's office to call the paramedics. They kept asking if the girl was still breathing, and I had no idea. It wasn't a cordless phone, so I had to grab another team member to get them to check for me. They did not take it well. I don't think they'd ever seen another person on the verge of death like that, lips turning blue and stuff, and I had to send them home early when all was said and done. I don't really blame her either. It was a horrifying thing to behold. The paramedics showed up, and luckily this was at a time when the use of Narcan was becoming increasingly prevalent. For those that don't know, Narcan is a nasal spray that can reverse the effects of an opioid overdose. So luckily for us, and the girl in question, no one died that day. But the thing that sticks with me is the look I saw in that girl's eyes when we opened up the stall so the medics could get to her. I had to, like, shimmy up the bathroom stall before jumping down, careful not to land on her so I could unlock the stall door. The medics wanted to kick it in, but it was quicker and much less expensive for me to just climb over. But when I did, I kid you not, the wide-eyed look of fear in that girl's eyes, the cold sweat clinging to her brow as she crept further and further towards death's door, I had never been so creeped out in my entire life. When I was in college, I worked a night shift one summer vacation. I was 19 years old and an average-looking female. I wasn't enthused about having to work a job over the summer, but it was the only way I was going to be able to afford tuition. Working night shift was probably the weirdest experience of my life. It was at the McDonald's drive-thru. I still remember my first night on the job. This lady came in and was talking to someone while she was waiting for us to take her order. She sounded extremely upset, and she was screaming at the top of her lungs. It sounded like it was directed at someone in the back seat. I immediately assumed that perhaps she was abusing her children. I'm a psychology major, so I naturally pick up on stuff like that. She ordered 3 Big Macs and 3 large Cokes, and my intuition has been wrong. When she pulled up to pay for her meal, she was completely alone. I was honestly a little startled. Why would this lady be here, wanting this much food and screaming in her car if she was alone? I couldn't wrap my head around the situation. She was otherwise polite. She was nice as she spoke to me and paid for her food and left. She even told me to have a good night. She had been the only customer we had in probably a 45-minute window. And after she left, I saw some of my coworkers laughing at me. I asked him what was so funny, and he told me it was my first encounter with Schizo Susan. They told me that she regularly did stuff like this and always showed up at all hours of the night to order seemingly too much food. She was always yelling at people in her car, but there was never anyone actually in her car. They didn't actually know her name, so they just started calling her Schizo Susan. They told me that there were occasional nights when she was the only customer to come through the drive-thru at all, and I found that extremely unnerving. I immediately started wondering what was wrong with this woman. About a week went by. She came in every night just like they said, and in between speaking to me to order her food and picking up her food, she was always yelling at someone. I couldn't take it anymore. I had to know what was up, so I formulated a plan. I was just going to ask her who she was speaking to. You know, play it off like I thought she was talking to me. It was the best I could come up with without seeming abrasive. I remember it being a Friday night when I decided I was going to go do it. I had chickened out a couple of times, but I figured that since I don't work the weekends, may as well try something new to end my last shift for the week. Well, the night that I did it, I listened into her screaming for a few more seconds than I normally did. You see, I can listen to what people are saying through the McDonald's speaker without them necessarily knowing that I'm listening. If I don't say anything, they would never know. I normally never did this because it's kind of frowned upon. I'm pretty sure there's some kind of rule against it, but I listened for maybe 20 or 30 seconds. I listened for long enough to know that she was yelling at someone named Darian. When she was in the middle of saying something, I interrupted her and said, "I'm sorry, ma'am, were you speaking to me?" She just replied, "No." "Okay," I thought to myself. I knew that I had to try something else. I asked her if Darian would be ordering with her. Then she was silent. It wasn't an entire minute, but she just didn't say anything. After the second time of asking her if she was still there, she let out a banshee of a scream. It was the loudest thing that I've ever heard in my life. It really hurt my ears, blasting through the intercom. The McDonald's microphone system is already pretty loud, but when someone screams into it, trust me when I say that it's the most unbearable thing you've ever experienced. I was also surprised at how long she screamed. She had one deep, guttural scream going for like 30 entire seconds. In the moment, though, I was scared for my life. I also got really worried that I was going to lose my job. I felt really guilty for asking, like it was my fault for setting her off. In retrospect, I don't think I really did anything horrible to her. Literally just ask her if the person whose name she was screaming just a minute ago was also going to be ordering food. He didn't actually say anything when she screamed. It was just kind of a violent and guttural screaming. I was really taken aback there for a minute. How the heck do you even respond to that? I asked her if she wanted to continue placing her order, and that's when she just drove away. She floored it and drove way faster than she should have. And as she drove by, I saw her face looking at me through the window. It must have only been a split second that I could see her, but I got that one really good look at her. She looked extremely distressed. And as if things couldn't get any weirder, the microphone system stopped working correctly the rest of the night. I think she screamed loud enough to break something in it. And that was hands down the weirdest thing to ever happen to me throughout any job I've ever worked. And this weird lady just disappeared after that. She stopped coming to McDonald's altogether. I asked some of the other coworkers how long she has been stopping by for her nightly visits, and all they said was that it was for as long as they can remember, which probably meant at least a year for some of them. I felt somewhat guilty for angering this lady so badly, but I think it is safe to say she probably needs some serious mental help. I haven't worked at McDonald's in a long time, and I don't ever plan on working fast food again. I just hope that wherever that lady ended up, she got the help that she so desperately needed. I work at a regional grocery store. I'm a 26-year-old female. I graduated from college with a master's degree in psychology and still couldn't find a job. Due to family circumstances, I wasn't able to get my PhD, which was basically the bare minimum to land any decent-paying job, so I was a little stuck. I even had a hard time finding a regular job. I had applied to a bunch of lower positions, but I kept getting rejected because I was overqualified. Over and over again, people told me that I would get too bored on the job, and so they wouldn't hire me. This made me livid. After a certain point, my student loan payments were due and I really needed the money. I had to ask my cousin's friend for a job. He was the manager at this regional grocery store. Literally the only position they had available was stocking shelves on night shift. I couldn't believe myself. I was so ashamed. I felt like I'd wasted years of my life and thousands of dollars in debt just to get a job anyone could do. But either way, the job itself wasn't all that bad. I was allowed to listen to my earbuds while I worked. This meant I could turn on my favorite podcast while working. My Favorite Murder, if you're wondering. I must have worked there for about a year before the big change came. Previously, the store closed down at 12 in the morning, but for whatever reason, that policy got changed and it became a 24-hour store with the exception of holidays and Sunday nights. It really sucked. What used to be my podcast and stock the shelves time kept getting interrupted by stupid customers asking where things were. That was fine. I didn't mind helping people out. I worked there after all. But they would literally ask me where the most obvious grocery items were. So many times I couldn't help but think, are you literally blind or stupid? But then there was one night when a very strange man came up to me. He had really buggish eyes. Entire body was round, and he had the longest nose hair I'd ever seen on a human being. It was like he took the hair right off of his head and glued it into his nose. I was down on my knees stocking the bottom shelves when he touched my hair. I had my hair in a ponytail that night, and he lightly caressed the part of it that was touching my back. I jerked back and asked him, "Excuse me?" He tried playing it off like he had arthritis, but I knew that he was just being a creep. I asked him what he wanted. He stood there for a second. He seemed to be thinking of what to say, but only one word came out of his mouth. "You." He walked up closer to me and then started to smell my shoulder. It felt so weird, and I don't think I could have been more creeped out. I told him that if he doesn't need any help finding any items, then
I had work I had to be doing. But he kept standing there. He started smiling real wide and then hugged me. "It's okay, darling. I'm going to take care of you." At this point, I was screaming inside of my own head. This freak was crossing a million different lines. I pushed him off of me and ran to get my manager, who was a larger guy. He'd have no problem fighting this creep if it came to it. The creepy guy followed me as I went too. The nerve on this guy. When he saw my manager down the aisle, he must have had second thoughts because he turned around and started running away. I explained to my manager everything that had happened, and he said he'd take care of it if that guy came back again. And that creep was smart, because he waited a couple of weeks before he did come back. He waited long enough that the incident would not be on the tip of anyone's mind. I wasn't expecting him, and neither was my manager. I was standing there stalking a shelf like I always did, and all of a sudden I felt someone tugging my hair. They tugged really hard, and it really hurt my neck. They totally overpowered me and started dragging me across the floor. At this point, I hadn't even realized who it was until I looked up to see that man. He must have dragged me a solid 30 feet to the exit before someone saw what was going on. It wasn't my manager, but it was another one of the girls who worked with me. She started screaming like a banshee and running at him, and for one reason or another, he decided to run away again. I was beyond relieved. I couldn't believe that he was just going to walk up to me and start dragging me out of the store by my hair. What kind of psycho does that? It was all just truly horrifying. This was finally the incident that convinced the store owner that we had to have security if we were going to be open at night. We had a security guard somewhere on the premises after that, and I felt a lot safer. I'm still looking for a job in psychology, and I really hope I can get one soon. I felt like I really needed a break after having gone through all of this. I think this still scares me so much because it involved my daughter. It's the summer of 2016, and we just purchased a new house. The washer and dryer included with it were brand new. We already had a set, albeit much older. We saw a chance to make a little money and listed them on Craigslist. I hadn't even been aware of the place before my son suggested it. It was surprising to me how fast the call started. We expected it would take the weekend at least before we had a buyer. Several people wanted to pick it up the following morning. Unfortunately, our family was traveling to a reunion and wouldn't be around to let them in. Every caller was told whoever arrived first Monday morning would be the lucky buyer. The terms were set, and we headed out the following morning. That night, we received a panic call from our daughter. She had stayed behind because of illness. Something truly scary and extraordinary had happened just hours before. She said she was laying in bed, watching TV, and heard a loud crash. Then, voices echoed from the living room. Not sure what to do, she stayed still and listened. When she was certain it wasn't us, she grabbed her phone and hid in the closet. The voices of two men drew closer and stopped outside her door. They were talking about looking for something. She feared that they were there to kidnap her. The dispatcher kept her calm and they made small talk until the cops arrived. A ruckus could be heard coming from the living room along with some yelling. Then, everything went silent. The dispatcher stopped talking for a moment. Seconds passed, then it was all over. The dispatcher spoke up and told her she could come out. She emerged and introduced herself just as the last thief was being let out. It took a week or two to get the full story. The interrogations uncovered their reason for the break-in. The pair had intended on buying the washer and dryer, at least at first. When I mentioned we'd be out of town, they decided to just break in and take them. Both swore they never knew my daughter was there. I thank my maker they didn't. No telling what could have happened. After first making sure our girl was okay, we returned home that night. I remember shaking like a leaf the whole drive back. I jumped from the car before my husband could park it. The second I saw her, I gave her a big hug and didn't let go for a long time. My husband and I spoke to the police the following morning. They assured us because of their previous convictions the burglars would do prison time. They were still inside the last time I heard and wouldn't be released before 2025. However, with all the cons getting out because of the lockdown, I fear they may be among them.
Although our daughter seems to have left it in the past, the long-term effects still aren't clear. If they are released early, I hope any hidden trauma doesn't rear its head and set her recovery back. As for the washer and dryer, a nice young couple picked it up that Monday morning. We happened to run into them a few months ago, and they said both units were still working well. I mentioned to them what happened that weekend, and they were shocked, but still able to find the funny side. I'm glad things went well, and we were both able to laugh about it now. Every day we hear of families that weren't so lucky and I'm thankful to not be among them. It was May of last year, and I had just signed the lease on a new house. It turned out the refrigerator didn't come with the deal. I'd spend most of my money on the house, so I started looking for a cheap one at garage sales. I couldn't find any that way. Then, I remembered Craigslist. After just 10 minutes, one popped up, not far from me. I called the number and a nice lady answered. She said the refrigerator was still for sale, but she couldn't guarantee it would still be there when I arrived. So, against my better judgment, I asked for her PayPal and sent her the $75. She sent me an email confirming she got the money, and we set a date for me to pick it up. That Saturday, I texted her, letting her know I was on my way. The house was a nice ranch-style place. I knocked, and this hot brown-haired girl in very short cutoffs answered. After I picked my jaw from the ground, I asked her for Sunny. She said that was her and showed me inside. I had zero reason to be nervous. Like the outside, the house was nicely finished and smelled clean. We made small talk for a few minutes until this big dude, at least 6'5". She introduced me to him as John, her boyfriend, and she said he would take me to the refrigerator. She disappeared to the back of the house and I never saw her again. John led me through the kitchen to the garage. He opened the door and pointed to the refrigerator. It was all the way across from me, almost sitting against the overhead door. I could barely see it because the garage itself was so dark. I asked him if there was a light, but he said it had broken and they hadn't had the chance to fix it. No big deal. He had to open the overhead door so I could move it out anyway. I asked him to raise it, but he said it was also broken. He apologized. I was just going to have to bring it through the house. This annoyed me, but I had no choice at that point. There was a little light shining in from the house. It was going to have to do. I took 2 steps, maybe 3, into the garage before I realized that there was plastic on the floor. I looked down and saw that it covered the entire floor. This is when I began getting nervous. I couldn't think of any reason why it would be there except I stopped in my tracks. John's shadow began drawing closer. Everything inside of me said to leave. Suddenly I turned around and walked quickly back. I was surprised to see how close John was actually to me, but I kept going. I weaved around him and said, "Ah, I forgot my dolly in the truck. I'll be right back." There was a dolly leaning against the wall not far away. He pointed to it and began to say something, but I didn't stop. When I was sure he wasn't behind me anymore, I ran the rest of the way, out the door, all the way to my truck. I hopped in it and tore out of there. I don't know what happened after that. I got a few texts from Don, but I erased them without reading them. When I got home, I logged on to Craigslist to report them. I was shocked to see that the listing was already gone. I looked around for another 30 minutes to make sure. They must have erased it right away. I also called the police and made a report. They seemed a little dubious of my claim, but promised to check it out. I never heard from them again, and I don't much care. I'm alive, and that's good enough for me. As for the $75, there was no way I was going to ask for it back. It wasn't worth getting involved with those freaks again. I haven't gone on the site since then. The whole system strikes me as risky these days. Anyway, I got lucky a week later. There was a garage sale in my neighborhood that had a used refrigerator. It was $100, but a lot nicer than the one, and it serves its purpose just fine. As I wrap this up, I don't want to give people the wrong idea. I don't think Craigslist is dangerous for you to use. Thousands of folks get stuff off of there every day with no trouble. But after what happened to me, I just don't think it's worth the risk. However, if you do find something on the site, you just have to be careful. Bring a friend when you go to get it. If you can, meet in a public place during the day. Most importantly, though, use your head. If the situation seems sketchy, bail. It may mean the difference between life and death. All this happened because I saw a YouTube video about a shelf unit stereo. I've been looking for one for some time. The addition of a decent turntable sold me. My first stop was Amazon. Unfortunately, they wanted more than I could afford, so I hopped on eBay. I came across a few there, but all the sellers' feedback ratings were lower than I liked. At first, I thought I was SOL. Then I remembered Craigslist. Within 10 minutes, I'd found my stereo. I contacted the seller, and we agreed to meet at Walmart at around 8 p.m. I grabbed the cash and left about 7:30. Our arrangement was to meet close to the building. I drove around the lot for a good 15 minutes before I gave up. I just figured I'd been trolled. However, as I headed toward the exit by the highway, I saw two men waving their arms. It had to be the sellers, so I pulled over and parked. I asked why they had parked so far from the store. One guy claimed that there were no parking spaces when they arrived. From what I could see, there were plenty. I let it go, though. There was no point in angering them. Maybe they were just stupid. There's plenty of folks like that around here. The taller of the two made small talk for a few minutes. I didn't want to be rude, so I humored him. The moment he stopped speaking, I tried to get the sale in motion. While we were talking, I hadn't noticed that the other guy had snuck up behind me. When I pulled the cash from my pocket, I got a hard nudge in my back. This caused me to jerk upright. When I looked at the tall guy, he had a pistol pointed at me. My instinct was to yell for help, but the two guns suggested against it. It was obviously a robbery. The tall guy didn't have to ask. I handed the cash to him, and he kindly said thank you. And I hope that was the end of it. They'd drive away, and I'd be left scared and feeling stupid. But I was wrong. The tall guy demanded I give up my phone. That was going to hurt more than the money. I reluctantly pulled it from my pocket and took one last look. The entire time, the other guy didn't say a word. Now they had what they wanted. The two men got in the car and drove away, leaving me shaking in fear and feeling like a fool. I convinced myself I'd taken the proper measures to prevent stuff from going wrong, but the moment they changed the plan, I went ahead anyway, despite any misgivings I had. Now I was minus $100 in cash and a $400 phone. Without a phone, I had to walk the 200 yards to the store to call the cops. The employees tried to be sympathetic, but I'm sure they thought I was stupid, too. The police arrived soon and took my statement. I respect them for being honest with me. We all knew the guys probably wouldn't be caught, and they haven't been. Almost 4 years on, and I have yet to hear of an arrest. I suppose I should be grateful it didn't cost me more. Had my assailants been of the mind to, I could have paid the ultimate price.
My definition of a good hotel is a place where I could be comfortable to stay at. It's a quote I've been holding up until I experienced something out of the ordinary, an experience that I really don't want to happen again. Anyway, it started when everything changed. People need to be quarantined due to a pandemic going on around the world, and because of this, our normal means of transportation has been quite difficult. Fortunately, we were given the opportunity to stay at a nearby place for us to be able to get to work easily. In that way, we can sustain our needs due to this national emergency. I got to the reception, and she gave me a key. It's basically a small room in an apartment. It consists of a window and a door that leads to a small bathroom. It's decent. Nothing much, but it will definitely help me since I currently live 40 minutes away from my job. The first day I arrived was very comfortable and pretty normal, but I have to make sure that the place where I stay was clean, because I'm the type of person who really hated dirty surroundings. So I decided to clean the place up myself without the help of housekeeping. I mopped the floor, fixed the bed, and wiped the window, until I noticed that there was this tiny black paper. By the looks of it, it was attached to the wall, long enough to have cobwebs all over it. I took it off from the wall and spent the day cleaning the whole room, not knowing that this will be the last normal day of my entire stay in the apartment. The following day, I had this nightmare. Everything in my dream was all pitch black, and I couldn't really see anything, only but pure darkness. But as I turned around, I saw a silhouette of a man sitting on a chair, singing something that sounded like a cradle song. I just stared at him and noticed that he wanted to get up, but his feet were tied up to the chair. I woke up normally, although the scene still lingers at the back of my mind, but since I don't really believe in the paranormal, I decided to shake it off and thought it was just probably a normal nightmare. On the third day, I had the same nightmare. Same man, same cradle, same position, but there was something still off about this guy. I leaned forward, eyes squinting together as I saw this man was no longer tied from his chair. I got startled as this man started to slowly stand up. This dream was becoming way too realistic. I felt that this man was approaching me. I desperately tried to move, but noticed that my whole body was stuck against the bed. I struggled and struggled until I finally gave in. This guy was trying to touch my feet with his hands. I vividly felt it. I was frightened. I just couldn't feel anything other than the fact that I could only shut my eyes and try to wake up. Eventually, long after I woke up, it was 3:08 in the morning. I breathed and listened to some songs to forget the terror that still haunts me. But it's getting worse. The song that I was playing got switched to an old song. The lights suddenly shut off. I saw the man with my own two eyes, sitting on my chair by the nearby window. He was about to stand up and come towards me. I was really scared and almost cried. I covered myself with a blanket and prayed until the music went back to normal. Then suddenly, the lights turned back on. I was really exhausted and barely even breathing because of the terror I experienced. And I didn't know what to do. I tried to ask the front desk about the history of that room. She couldn't even tell me. I told her what I experienced, and I saw the fear in her eyes. But she was trying to change the story and make up certain things in order for me to stop. I still don't know what's the story behind that room, but what's bothering me is that what if I didn't remove the black paper that was stuck to the wall? Will I still experience what happened? Or was it really there, waiting for another victim?
Every year, My town hosts a carnival, carousels, fair games, Hall of Mirrors, and that stupid twirly swing ride that makes you want to vomit. They really pull out all the stops for this one weekend in October. Growing up, I would get sugar sick, as my mom liked to call it, from all the cotton candy and funnel cakes. I'd only feel the symptoms after the night was done, while laying in bed, clutching my prizes. I ignored the pain and played back all the festivities in my head. I skip the carnival now. It doesn't do anything for me anymore. So imagine my dismay as my girlfriend, who helps work the carnival, dragged me along one night after all the crowds had left. "No lines," she squealed. "I even know how to turn on the Ferris wheel." I tried to look excited. She yanked me over to the shooting gallery, and we sat down in front of a counter lined with water pistols. Several bullseye targets hung about 15 feet away. We fired away, but of course, I let her win. I jumped the counter and make my way over to the prize rack. Huge stuffed animals, baseball caps, and t-shirts lined the wall. "Which one do you want?" I yelled back. She tried to look like she was making a life-altering decision. I'll admit now, it was kind of cute. Before choosing, I see her whip out her cell phone and snap a picture of me next to the prizes. I'm stuck between picking you or the stuffed octopus next to the clown head doll. "I'll take the octopus." I rolled my eyes and reached past the clown head doll for the octopus. From there, she pulled me over to the carousel. I watched her disappear into the engineer's control room, and a few seconds later the pipe organ started and the carousel cranked into motion. During the ride, she felt it was time for another picture. I really tried to smile this time. We only stayed in the Hall of Mirrors for a few minutes. It was pitch black in there. We kept bumping into the mirrors and each other. Of course, she snapped a picture in there, too. The blinding flash didn't help our disorientation. After the terrifying Hall of Mirrors situation, we decided to leave. She told me she was going to go home and post pictures of the great night. The next morning, I got on Facebook and noticed the small album she uploaded. I started reading through the comments. "Lucky bastards, carnival all to yourself, nice." What caught me off guard were the next comments. "Love the photobombing clown. Who is that dressed up as the clown?" "Wait, what?" I looked through the pictures again, and sure enough, there it is. In the carousel picture, there was a tall clown in the background. The speed of the ride somewhat blurred his image, but I could see him just standing there, arms at his sides. In the Hall of Mirrors, the flash illuminated the face of a smiling clown. In one mirror in the corner of the picture, there was something chillingly twisted about his expression. How many times did I collide into him thinking it was my girlfriend? And lastly, there was the picture of me standing next to the shooting gallery prize rack. There he was next to the octopus I grabbed for my girlfriend. I thought he was a doll. The realization made me absolutely sick. I was a hair's length away from him. His warm breath probably grazed my skin. What sort of sick delight did he get from doing this? I called up my girlfriend, who was still asleep, and asked her if she knew the clowns that were hired for the carnival. Her reply made me shudder. They got rid of clowns 5 years ago when parents complained that they were scaring the kids. I was camping with my best friend in the summer of 2006. We always went to the same area about 100 miles away from our hometown. Camping was our thing, our favorite thing to do. We always brought a bunch of food, drinks, and equipment. And one time, when we woke up in the morning and came out of our tent, all of our stuff was gone. So from then on, we would always set up a camera at night. We would skim through the usually boring footage the next day. Honestly, we never saw anything exciting, and never caught anyone stealing from our site. But this one time, we were watching the footage while eating breakfast and were horrified to see a guy walk into our campsite and sit in the chair that was facing our tent. We watched the clock on the footage, and he sat there for 20 minutes. Then, without warning, the footage showed the man get up, walk over to our tent, and unzip it. He then climbed inside. As you can imagine, we were freaking out. 5 minutes later, the man climbed back out and disappeared. I have no idea how we didn't wake up, and I have no idea what he did while he was in the tent with us. It literally makes me shiver every single time I think about it. Camping in Yellowstone National Park with my wife. It started pouring rain unexpectedly one night, and we were forced to ditch our tent and sleep in the SUV. It was thundering very loudly, and all of a sudden we hear a knock on the driver's side window. I wasn't looking at the window when it happened, and when I looked up at it, I saw no one. My first thought was that it was someone who needed something or needed help. Hesitantly, I rolled the window down. The rain was coming down hard, and it was so dark, I couldn't see anything. I yelled outside, "Hello?" But nobody responded, and a few seconds later, someone walked by my window towards the front of the car and circled around the front to the passenger side. My wife flipped out and locked the door. We could both see whoever it was stop by her door, and then they tried opening it. I rolled my window back up and locked my side, and seconds later, the person vanished. It was horrifying. I was on summer break and went camping with my friend and his parents. We went to the lake during the day and did the s'mores thing at night. His parents shared a tent while my friend and I had our own. I can't remember where the campsite was, and I'm not really in contact with my friend anymore. But 15 years later, I'm assuming it wasn't the safest place to camp. Here's why. I woke up sometime in the early morning, like 3 or 4 a.m., and immediately saw a man's face looking in the tent at us. He had unzipped the door just enough to stick his head inside. He looked absolutely insane. He had big eyes and wild hair. I was so stiff from fear, I literally couldn't do anything. The man kept moving his head from left to right, very, very slowly, as if it was uncontrollable. I guess my friend could hear me breathing loudly or something, because he woke up too. He had the same reaction as me, and just laid there in terror, looking at this mysterious man. I'm not certain how long he was sitting there looking at us, but it felt like hours, shaking his head back and forth. At some point, we heard a noise close by, and so did the man. He disappeared quick, and a couple minutes later we got out of our tent and woke up his parents. The guy was long gone. I'm still afraid of camping to this day. This happened to my friend Jane earlier this summer. Jane lives in a bungalow a block away from Green Lake in Seattle. For those of you unfamiliar, Green Lake is a really popular place for running, outdoor and park activities, dining, etc., and is super busy during the summer. It's common for people to be out late at night during the summer, so Jane didn't think anything was amiss when she heard noises outside her house at midnight. She woke up again around 3 a.m., but this time, the noises were louder, like something was hitting or tapping her house. She turned on all the lights and walked around her place, but didn't see anything and went back to bed. She felt uneasy and didn't sleep well the rest of the night, and woke up just before her alarm went off at 5 a.m. As she sat up in bed, She looked through her open bedroom door to see a man on all fours, army crawling down the hall towards her bedroom. Jane screamed, and as she goes to grab her phone to call 911, the man calmly stands, looks at her, and says, "Don't worry, I'm leaving." The man turned around and walked toward the front door. She shut her bedroom door and called the police. After the police arrived, she discovered the man had removed all of her window screens and presumably entered her home around the time she woke up at 3 a.m. The police did not believe he intended to rob her since he didn't take any of her valuables. The only things he did take were her car keys and her house keys that were in her purse by the front door. Jane's friend, a cop, believes the only reason this guy was so calm is because he has likely done this before. He also thinks that he had probably been watching her for some time and knew her schedule well enough to attack her when she was most defenseless. Whether he took her keys just to confuse her or because he intended to come back is beyond me. It was not uncommon back in the day for my mom to go to the store and leave me at home to watch TV. Nothing bad ever happened, but one time while watching TV, I heard the piano downstairs start to play. I just thought my mom was home, but was confused because she never played the piano. I went downstairs and walked into the room where the piano was. There was a crazy-looking man sitting at the piano and was looking at me with a huge, exaggerated smile as soon as I entered the room. I was frozen, and he continued to smile and play the piano. He stopped suddenly, but never looked away from me. It was pure terror and shock. I finally somehow was able to move and ran. I ran out my front door, which was unlocked, and ran to the neighbor's house across the street. The lady that lived there was very concerned, and I was surprised to see her walk over to my house by herself and go inside, and I was even more surprised when she came back out with the man. Apparently, the man was her mentally disabled brother, about 50 years old. I never saw him again, but I can remember his crazy exaggerated smile like it just happened yesterday. When I was 22, I was dating a guy that lived out in the country, pretty far away from where I lived. It was about 60 miles out, and while driving to his house one day, the sun started going down. It was about 8 p.m. It was still bright enough outside to see, but almost to the point where I needed my lights on. As I'm driving down this long stretch of road, I see something off in the distance. As I came a bit closer, I could see it was another car, a small red Toyota. It was stopped and turned kind of sideways in the opposite lane. When I came closer, I was horrified to see a woman lying face down in the middle of the road. I came to a stop about 30 feet away and grabbed my cell phone. I forgot that I didn't have any reception out here, and I sat thinking of what to do for a few minutes. Even though there was nothing that seemed threatening about the situation, I felt scared. I didn't want to leave my car, and I realized I had no way of providing any kind of help anyway, so I decided to drive past the body and keep going. And when I got to the store about 20 miles away, I would get some help. So I started to drive by the body very slowly, going about 2 miles per hour, and when I was sure I cleared the body, I hit the gas. Only about 5 seconds go by, and I look in the rearview mirror. The body is now standing up in the middle of the road, facing me. I'm laying in bed reading with my dog at night. My bedroom door is open, and my room is the only room in the house with the lights on. It's completely silent. I took a quick glance at my dog. My dog is staring out the door into pure darkness. I see him slowly tilting his head to the side, which he only does when he sees or hears something that seems bizarre. Then he slowly stands up and starts growling and snarling towards the dark hallway. I start to call his name, but he ignores me, and his growling is becoming more and more aggressive. I stand up next to him and look out the door, but I can't see anything, it's so dark. He then starts to bark. I look down at him, and he is definitely staring at something in the hallway. I lean down to pet him, and as soon as I touch his head, he stops. His mouth opens, and he starts panting while wagging his tail. It was so unnerving. I'm going to tell this story for my grandpa, since he is no longer with us. He told me a long time ago that he was living in Hawaii, and one weekend day, he was at the beach with some of his friends and a group of girls. He said they were all swimming and having a great time, and that he and a pretty girl had hit it off and went for a walk down the beach. The stretch of beach was terribly long, according to my grandpa, and they walked all the way down the beach until nobody else was in sight, and they eventually had to stop walking on the sand when they hit some huge rocks. My grandpa says they swam out into the water and around the rocks and were amazed and excited to see a hidden area on the other side of them. They swam over to the sand behind the rocks and kept walking. The way my grandpa put it, they were walking and saw a person laying in the sand. Him and the girl both knew right away somehow that the person was dead. The girl became scared and wanted to turn back, but my grandpa kept going and she followed. He says that when they got to the person, they were horrified to see it was a woman covered in blood who had looked to have been stabbed many times. He says at that time the woman vomited, and here's the weirdest part of the story. I'm not sure why he told me this, but he said he briefly thought that this would be a damn good place to stab someone to death, and that it was a good thing he didn't have any knives on hand. He laughed after telling me that, and then said they just walked away and told their friends. He never told the police department, and isn't sure that any of them did. Alright, so it was summer, and my two best friends and I just finished our shopping for the camping trip. We were all 16, and my friend's dad was taking us. It was quite a long drive, and we arrived about 4 hours after we had left. We set up a couple of tents, and it was already getting dark by the time we finished. We made a fire in the pit and ate dinner. We stayed up late that night talking, and my friend's dad even let the three of us drink beer. We finally went to sleep after talking and screwing around for hours. The next morning we woke up early, and breakfast was already being made. My friend's dad had told us about a waterfall he had seen a long time ago that he was sure was nearby. He said he went swimming in the water below the waterfall, and that it was secluded and really cool. He said we would have to go on a hike to get there, and I was looking forward to seeing that waterfall more than the others, and I really wanted to go swimming. After breakfast, we changed into some hiking clothes, grabbed our swim trunks, and walked off into the direction of the supposed waterfall. 3 minutes into the hike, we were walking through the woods and saw a very small shack or something like that that somebody had built. It looked very old. It was run down and falling apart. We of course became curious and started walking over towards it. That's when we saw him, a clown, standing in the open doorway of the shack. The three of us stopped dead in our tracks and didn't know what to do or what to say. I can't really speak for them, but at first I wanted to laugh. But then terror quickly swept over me because of the realization that this was completely messed up. Why the hell would there be a clown out here? The clown stood there like a statue, and it was obvious that he was trying to scare us. Then, he started running in our direction, and we of course turned around and ran. All three of us fell and tripped over each other because of the adrenaline and how scared we were. We made it back to camp and stared in the direction we had just come from, but he never emerged from the trees. My friend's dad said he believed us when we told him, but I don't think he really did. He was way too calm about it. The three of us freaked out and laughed about it after a while, but I think about it whenever I hang out with the two of them, and we always bring it up. This was 9 years ago, and I still think about it whenever I think of them or see a clown. What the hell was he doing out there? Planning to kidnap or murder someone? Was he just sitting out there, waiting for people to see him? The most horrific night of my life. Halloween 2010. My cousin Chris and I were roommates at the time, and we had just moved in together 2 months before Halloween. We were pretty well known in our town and wanted to throw a Halloween party at our new place. We spent the day getting the party ready, buying drinks and food, and setting up spiderwebs and other decorations. It was a pretty good time. I dressed up as a mad doctor, and Chris dressed up as a clown. He was the life of the party, and was doing ridiculous clown-like things to make everyone laugh. I was 18, and wasn't really used to drinking very much, but at that party, that night, I drank a lot. I started with beer, but then started taking shots with people. I can't really remember when people started to leave, but I think it was around 2 or 3 in the morning. I remember being so drunk that I couldn't move from the chair I was sitting in the living room. I was so drunk, people started leaving and I didn't even notice or care. I was just watching TV. I kind of remember Chris telling me he was going out to buy some alcohol for some people, and then I passed out. The next thing I remember is waking up to Chris coming back, walking through the garage door and sitting on the couch opposite of me. The whole room was spinning fast, and I could not keep my vision still enough to focus on anything. I remember asking Chris if he bought the booze, and he just shook his head no. After that, I just remember going in and out of consciousness. My phone was ringing, but I ignored it. I was too drunk and tired to reach into my pocket and answer it. But it kept ringing, over and over and over. I finally pulled it out and hit the green button on the screen. "Yeah," I said into the phone drunkenly. Then I heard Chris's voice say, "Shit, dude, finally. We were just about to leave. We're at Jack in the Box. Do you want anything?" In my drunken state, I didn't put it together right away, but I remember looking over at Chris on the couch. But the room was spinning so much I couldn't make out his face, just the bright colors from his costume. I then said to Chris, sitting on the couch, "Dude, stop. I think I'm gonna throw up. Stop calling me. Just stop." He said nothing back, and then I heard Chris's voice on the phone say, "Later," and he hung up. I sat there for a minute, barely able to think, but then somehow, I had a moment of clarity. I realized that I heard girls in the background on the phone, and then I put it together. I sat up on the chair and then stood up on my feet. Whoever was sitting on the couch in front of me was a complete blur, so I started walking over to him. Each step was extremely difficult. I stopped in front of him, squinted my eyes, and put my hands on the side of my head. It worked. It steadied my vision, and I could clearly see the older man sitting on the couch, smiling at me. I asked him who the hell he was, and then he got up and walked past me. I stood there facing the couch, unable to turn around. That's the last thing I remember. The next thing I knew, I woke up in a hospital, and I felt a very different kind of drunk. I asked a random nurse standing near me where I was and what the hell was going on, and she told me that I had been attacked. About 24 hours later, I was finally thinking clearly again when I woke up. Chris, my sisters, my parents were all in the room. I asked what happened again, and Chris said that he found me laying on the living room floor in a puddle of blood. They were as confused as I was, but I tried to tell them that I thought that it was Chris in the room with me. They didn't understand, but I told them there was a man. There was a man in the house. It was a clown. 6 years ago, I had a group of friends that always hung out together. My girlfriend at the time was also a part of this group. One day I get a phone call from the cops, and they tell me my girlfriend is at the police station because she found a body at our friend Jessica's house. She went over to Jessica's house to pick her up and found her in a pool of blood in her bedroom. She was stabbed repeatedly by her boyfriend, who was also a part of our group. It was shocking, but over time, she got over seeing what she did, and we moved on. That is, until one day I picked up her phone while she was in her backyard gardening and started looking through her photos. I stumbled onto an unbelievably gruesome picture. She had taken a close-up picture of Jessica before the cops picked her up. Her face was mangled completely. I left her house immediately and took the phone to the cops. It was a crazy situation. I was told later that she also stole some of Jessica's jewelry. From that day on, I've had this disturbing feeling that she might have had something to do with Jessica's murder. I was on my way home from work years ago, riding the subway as I always did. The subway was always packed, but I had managed to find a seat this day. As I was sitting there, people watching, I felt something stuffed in between the seat and the window. I looked down, and it was an envelope. I pulled it out, and it was sealed. There was nothing written on it, and I, of course, opened it. There was a small slip of paper, folded in half. I pulled it out and read the single sentence printed on it. I've killed 16 people. Back in the 60s and the 70s, my family lived in Chatsworth, California. The town was at the foot of the Santa Susana Mountains, which seemed to be a wonderful wilderness playground to all of the kids in the area. Browns Canyon Road wound up the mountains, with maybe only two houses along its 6 or 7 miles. It really was a beautiful area, with a stream, wildflowers, and live oaks, and the local teens liked to party up there at night. One night, a bunch of teens were sitting by the stream. The starlight, the rippling noise of the water, and the warm summer night. All were made even more intense by the fact that they were stoned on LSD. One of the boys leaned back on his hands where he was sitting in the dirt. Lost in thought, he started running his hand over something behind him. It was bumpy in a regular sort of way, so his fingers made kind of a rhythm. Bump, bump. Bump, bump. After a while, he finally turned to see what it was. He had his hand in the mouth of a decapitated girl. He had been running his hands over her teeth over and over again. That was the bump, bump, bump. The poor girl had been chopped up and dumped along the stream with some dirt thrown over her, and the kids were sitting on her. Of course, they all freaked out, but I heard that the kid who found her never came down from his acid trip. I can't verify that part, but I do know we didn't see him around that area again. The entire neighborhood was spooked for quite some time. In fifth grade, coming back inside from recess, I found a note in my desk. It read, "I am going to kill you." I showed it to my teacher, and she tried getting the person who wrote it to come forward by scolding the entire class. But nobody ever admitted to doing it. The next day, coming back from recess, I found a note that said the same thing in the same handwriting. The teacher tried to compare the writing with everyone in the class, and she contacted my parents and the principal, but nothing became of it. 3 years later, in eighth grade, at a different school, I was finishing up my third period gym class. I went into the locker room to change back into my school clothes. When I opened my locker, a note fell to the floor. I picked it up and read it. My blood turned ice cold as I read the same words in the same handwriting. Please welcome my friend, Mortis Media. Are you ready for the darkness to take control?
This started when my two brothers, David and Luke, and Luke's girlfriend Sarah, all drove down to the desert to spend some time in the country. This is reservation land, as it were, so red dirt everywhere. We had some pistols and decided to go target practice. We took our gear and some old targets to this place called Devil's Heartbeat. I had never been before, but the three of them were familiar with the area. It was a canyon about 200 feet deep, and we stayed on one end of the canyon, by the drop-offs, and to our left was a ravine. And about 50 feet over, the opposite side of the canyon rose up above us. On the opposite end, there were some Anasazi ruins. The Navajo may disagree with historians on the Anasazi's origins and departure, as according to the Navajo, they simply disappeared from existence, leaving behind plates, dishes, and food, and went into another dimension, or some equivalent. But whatever the history, the Navajo do not like to wander into Anasazi ruins. I never asked why, but figured it had something to do with disrespect or preserving history. As such, none of the others cared a bit about these canyon ruins. They were more interested in shooting pistols. I could see old beds, ladders, and even cave drawings on the cliffs with my naked eye. And I got this strange fixation going over me. I'm not Navajo, and felt that their rules didn't apply to me. I set off down the cliffs with a rope, and decided I would climb down, cross the canyon floor, and then climb back up. This was a bad idea for a million reasons, but it was like an obsession. I can't explain the feeling. It was like magnetism. I wanted to be in those ruins. And it wasn't just some touristy curiosity. I felt as if I were meant to go there. I kept slipping and getting stuck on the rocks. I was so frustrated I started crying. Finally, I was deterred by the unmistakable sound of a growl coming from the canyon floor below me. There were trees down there, so I couldn't see what was making the growl. But mountain lion immediately rose to mind. And I got my ass back up the cliffside. I said nothing to the others, and we shut the guns for a while. The only other strange occurrence was that while Sarah was aiming, things got eerily quiet. We all heard sounds from around us, behind us, maybe 20 feet away. It was like a growl, then a hoarse laugh, almost like a lion and then a hyena. We had a clear view of the entire area, and there was nothing, certainly not on the clifftops where we heard it anyway. The creepiest part was that while David, Sarah, and I all heard it from a close distance, Luke heard the exact same noise right by his ear. We ended up camping out to see if anything would happen, and this is when things got completely terrifying. Before, I was only scared of wild animals. We had guns though, and were sleeping with no bags nor tents, just some blankets under the stars with a little fire. So I felt safe when we had all laid down, and I fell asleep pretty quickly. I woke up a few hours later to see everyone else laying down with their eyes wide open, listening. The canyon was completely full of noises. The only way to describe it is people banging rocks together. There would be one set, maybe 300 yards away, then another clacking 200 yards away, and then 50 feet away. The canyon echoes, so it was hard to tell exactly how many rock smacking noises there were, but they sounded like Morse code. We listened for perhaps 10 minutes. No other animal noises. No nothing. Finally, David, who was a hard-ass and the least superstitious of his family, shouted, "Shut up!" And everything immediately stopped. My heart was in my throat. We just sat there and stared at each other wide-eyed. It was dead quiet. And then we heard another super weird set of noises from the Anasazi ruins. I don't know how to explain this one either, but it almost sounded like a zebra, and then the rock slash stick slash whatever started up again. But this was worse, because now other animal noises came in. We heard what sounded like wolves or coyotes barking, monkeys screeching, owls hooting, and those terrible zebra noises. We said nope. We got our happy little asses out of there immediately. It took us maybe 10 minutes to douse the fire, pack our blankets and speed away, with the noises continuing the entire time. That night, I was obviously pretty shaken. Before I could fall asleep again, my Navajo mother came and sat by me, and said that she could tell I had a rough day. We hadn't mentioned the creepy shit to avoid a lecture about messing around with the spirits. She asked me about it, and I ended up spilling my guts about not seeing the canyon ruins. It was something personal. I felt like I wanted to go there. Why couldn't I go? It would have been beautiful. After I word vomited all over her, I could see that she had a really concerned look over her face. "What is it?" I asked, totally confused. And she explained something I had no idea about. The spirits in the ruins like to lure people. When they get up to the ground, the spirits push them off. That's why we don't go there. I remained creeped out for the remainder of the visit. The town has a public accessible kiva, kind of like a tourist trap for little podunk places. But since I didn't see the ruins up close, I went down via the kiva. And I went alone, as of course my superstitious family refused to enter other natives' dwellings. I figured that nothing could push me off a cliff if I were in a kiva. I was right, but something even worse happened. Fast forward a few weeks later, I worked at a shitty call center in Salt Lake City, third shift. It was my first night alone, and I was feeling jumpier than ever since the kiva. My brothers already warned me that I had a skinwalker following me, but I, of course, did not believe it. I don't smoke, but I follow my co-workers out for smoke breaks because I liked the chat. Tonight, I lurked in the doorway because I had this horrible cloud of dread hanging over me. I was peeping out of the glass door, and being a total weirdo, it hit me then how paranoid I had been. That's what skinwalkers do. They mess around with your mind. Whilst I was pacing in front of the glass door, I decided that this whole thing was stupid, and I was going to go outside and stand there for the rest of my 10-minute break. Most of the smokers were already filing back in, but I walked out, put my hands in my pockets, and looked at the sky. I looked at the building, mentally patting myself on the back for not being a pussy. Then I saw something I will never be able to have a rational explanation for. We have 6 parking lots. In one of the lots far away from me, perhaps 100 feet away, I could see something walking. It was like a dog, obviously, but it was almost limping and walked like it were tired or hurt. Animal lover me forgot about skinwalkers, and I started walking towards it, making the ch-ch-ch, come here doggy, noises, and then I stopped abruptly. The dog had the body form of a greyhound, and it was grey, but there was something really wrong with it. It had bloody legs and limped, but it walked more like a person would on their feet and hands. Its butt was moving to and fro, and didn't make any sense. When it heard me, it just stopped without turning, something I've never known any dog to do. And finally, it looked over its shoulder at me, and this is the freakiest part. The dog was looking at me the way a person does. It had huge eyes, way too big for a greyhound, and its teeth were barred, as if it was considering biting me. Then it growled, but it was like a whistle growl, noises no regular animals make. It almost sounded like it wanted to talk to me, or that it was taunting me. Somehow in the middle of all of this, I realized it didn't have a tail. And I'd heard from all the Navajo stories that skinwalkers, when they appear as animals, don't have tails. Screw all logic and rationality. I turned and jetted. I didn't look back until I was inside the building and had pulled the door shut behind me. And when I looked back, of course, it was gone. When I described this to my brothers, they were absolutely sure it was a skinwalker. I then went through the trouble of blessing me, my apartment, them, and their apartments. I never saw the creepy bloody dog again, and have ever since never slightly wanted to visit those cliff ruins. I began babysitting at 13 to earn extra money to spend on horribly embarrassing things like Fall Out Boy CDs. I would almost always work for my father's clients, he's a lawyer, and get referred by word of mouth. I was babysitting for one family who had a little girl of 9 and a little boy of 7. The parents seemed okay, a tad crotchety, giving me a full schedule to follow and jokingly threatening to beat any boy who might mysteriously show up after they left. It felt cruel for them to accuse me of even knowing a boy, given that I basically looked like an overgrown baby with frizzy hair at my age. Almost immediately after the parents leave, the little girl sings in a creepy, high-pitched voice, "We're all alone now." Righto. Cue the Shining soundtrack. "I know," the little boy chimed in. "Let's play rape." Looking back now, I know the kid probably just heard that term on TV and knew the word was shocking and said it just for a reaction. I totally bought into it at the time, sputtering wide-eyed and changing the subject quickly. These kids were hell for the next hour. I wouldn't let them watch South Park on the TV because their parents did not seem to allow their precious 9 and 7-year-olds to watch a show like that. As soon as I said no, the little girl said casually, "Oh, that's fine. We'll just go play PlayStation in the family room. Feel free to watch it out here." I knew exactly what was headed. I said to them that they could go watch any other TV show in the living room whilst I made them dinner. The parents had left instructions to make them sandwiches. I could handle that. Before I'd even got the bread out, I hear a massive crash. It seems like the little girl had broken a glass. Tutting and pissed, but ultimately with no way of punishing her, I cleaned it up, whilst the two incredibly weird kids watched with wide eyes. So I dumped the broken glass into the trash and went back to making the sandwiches. I'm a vegetarian, so whilst the children had chicken, I made a simple salad sandwich for myself. Just as I was finishing, the little boy screamed out in what sounded like a pantomime of pain. Nonetheless, I ran over to the couch in the living room to check on him. "My ankle," he howled, dramatically flopping back into the couch. While I tried to figure out how he had hurt his ankle, the little girl slipped out of the room. Peripherally, I was aware of this, but didn't really pay it any mind, and focused on the little boy pretending to be in pain. He kept saying, "I went to stand, but it hurt too much. I don't know," over and over, until his eyes suddenly flicked to just behind me, where I could see the little girl standing with a perturbing smile on her face. It was a miracle he was healed. At this point, I was just thinking these kids were very strange and craved attention a little too much and probably needed more parental involvement. But whatever, I was 13 and that $60 was only 4 hours away. I set out the sandwiches for the two to eat at the dining table, and I went to get a soda and returned. After pouring soda for both of them, I realized that they hadn't taken a bite out of their sandwiches yet. I asked them what they were waiting for. They smiled. "For you to take a bite out of yours." I am so glad I had a gut feeling to open my sandwich, because when I did, I saw glass. Broken glass. The broken glass that I had put in the trash. I stared in horror at these two little children, staring at me, giving me maniacal grins. I lost it, shouting, "Are you two serious? At the very least, you could have really injured my mouth. What's wrong with you?" Instead of crying or apologizing, or pretending to be ashamed or confused, these two little kids began laughing. And not a childish laugh either. It was a low and threatening laugh. I'll never forget that noise. My immediate reaction was that these kids are too young to be laughing like that. I called my older sister, who was 17 at the time, told her over the phone what happened and cried about it a little. She came and took over for me. We left the house with chills after the parents arrived. I never babysat for those two again. What I can't get past is the level of predetermination that went into sprinkling that broken glass into my sandwich, and the total remorseless way that they responded to me being upset. They were unlike any two kids I've ever met before or since. I was a new nurse at our hospital and had only been working there for a couple of months. I had brought a patient of mine up from day surgery from the ER for an endoscopy, and they called me back down and asked me to bring up her family, as she didn't speak enough English to communicate and we needed her consent for a procedure. After dropping them off, I walked past the waiting room and headed back down the hall to the elevators. I took the way back to get to the ER, and all the hallways were deserted. You see, this used to be the pediatric wing of the hospital, but it has been shut down for years, and all the rooms are deserted, full of broken equipment, beds, and just general crap. As I reached the nurse's station at the T-junction, between the pediatric hallway and the hallway that goes down to the elevators, I saw a little girl standing across from the nurse's station further down the hall. She had big pigtails and was wearing a brown dress and white shoes. holding a teddy bear. I thought perhaps she was a family member who had walked away from the day surgery waiting room. I was concerned that she would go into one of these rooms and might get hurt or lost. So I said, "Hey, little girl, what are you doing? You don't need to be over here. You're going to get hurt." And I walked around the nurse's station so that I could grab her hand and bring her back. I shit you not. As I got about 15 feet away from her, she vanished. Every hair on my body stood up straight, and I turned and ran like a bat out of hell to the elevator. I pounded that button for what seemed like an eternity, until the elevator got to the floor I was on. As I got back to the ER, I walked up to the nurse's desk, and one of the older nurses looked at me and said, "Geez, what's wrong with you?" I remember babbling like an idiot as I tried to tell them what happened. After listening to me for a moment or two, the nurse said, "Oh, you saw the little ghost girl. Yeah, she's been around here for years." And I remember replying, "Well, thanks for telling me about this before." Apparently the ghost has been here ever since the ER, ducking in and out of patients' rooms and peeking around curtains. My wife worked up on the 7th floor and said that one time on nights, a whole row of patients started yelling about a little girl that was running around in the rooms. I guess she gets around. I was working at an 100-year-old abandoned farmhouse several years ago. My co-worker and I were told to find the well for the house, since they were thinking about developing the property. After looking for a while, we figured it might be in the old house. I grabbed my flashlight, and we headed in through a window that wasn't boarded up very well. The place was creepy. The second floor had a burnt goat carcass and pentagrams drawn in ash all over the walls. So that started the chills and goosebumps. We eventually made our way to the basement, where I almost fell into the very deep well at the end of the steps. I'm not sure how deep it was, but our 25-inch tape wouldn't hit the bottom. Anyway, my curiosity was still running wild, so we went searching around the basement. My co-worker noticed that one of the stone walls didn't make it all the way up to the ceiling, and it was probably a fake wall. Good call on his part. He boosted me over the wall, and I helped him climb over. The first room was empty, and had nothing exciting. Just dark, wet, and cold. Looking around, there was another wall with an opening. I decided to go first, and I was boosted over the wall. My co-worker thought it would be funny to hang onto the flashlight for a while whilst I stumbled in the dark. Finally, he tossed it over to me, and that's when I began freaking out. The room had chains built into the walls with wrists and ankle shackles. The walls had scratch marks from nails, and I'm guessing that someone tried to escape. I lasted about 30 seconds in that room before I started to dash over both walls and the well right out of the window we climbed through to get into that creepy house. I don't think it was just the shackles or the scratch marks that creeped me out, but the ice-cold chills that shot down my spine, like there was something truly evil lurking in that place. This is a story that I'm not supposed to be telling. A family secret that I'm not supposed to know about. When my grandfather was younger, he became the principal of an elementary school. He was in his late 20s, early 30s at the time. And despite being young, He was a born leader. He was a great principal, and everyone loved him. I can attest to that, as I attended multiple award ceremonies for him, and the respect and admiration he received was crazy. There was a young boy at the school who was having behavioral issues in class, and my grandfather saw the kid didn't have a lot of parental support. So he called the father and had a talk with him about spending more time with his son and just a general parenting session. It turned out that all the boy needed was his dad's attention, and after a few weeks, he was happy and was a model student. Whenever my grandfather would leave school late, he would see the dad was playing basketball with his son after he got home from work. It was one of those moments that he took pride in, being able to make a difference in people's lives. However, not everything had such an easy solution, and my grandfather found himself having to deal with an employee, Stanley the janitor, who was showing up for work drunk. Stanley was an alcoholic with a mean streak, and my grandfather tried on multiple occasions to deal with his behavior. Finally, though, Stanley one day showed up so drunk that my grandfather sent him home and called the superintendent to let him know that he was going to fire him the next morning after he sobered up. He then warned them to let him deal with Stanley when he was sober because he was not a stable person. As it goes in these kind of stories, the superintendent was furious and decided that he was going to call Stanley himself and fire him, despite my grandfather's warning. No one called my grandfather to tell him about it either, so he was completely in the dark and thought that he would just deal with it in the morning. Stanley was furious and went to the school that evening. He searched the offices, my grandfather's included, and tore things apart until finally he had what he wanted. He was in a blaze of fury, and on his way out, he saw the father and son playing basketball. He walked towards them and pulled something out of his trousers. It was a gun. He then proceeded to shoot the little boy, killing him instantly. The father was so upset and was crying hysterically. But somehow, he managed to get the gun away from Stanley and shot him. My grandfather was called to the elementary school immediately by police because there were two dead bodies, the little boy's and Stanley's. But what was even worse was the crying from the father and him saying that he couldn't save his son. It was clear that he would never forgive himself for that day. My grandfather was pulled aside by one of the police who had searched Stanley for evidence. They had found a list, a hit list of people that he was going to kill and all the addresses of the people that he had received when he was searching the offices. My grandfather was number one on that list. So if it wasn't for that father, it's likely that I would have never been able to meet my grandfather, and possibly my mother and grandmother would have been killed if Stanley had been able to complete his mission. To this day, I get goosebumps whenever I hear that story, and it's just so chilling. My grandfather never uttered a single word about this after his initial recount to my mother, and she made me swear to never tell him that I knew. He carried the weight of that boy's death until the day he died. So Stanley, I'm glad we never had to meet and that you were stopped before you could cause more harm.
All right, y'all, that is my time. I want to say thank y'all for tuning in. I hope y'all was entertained. To those of you who tuned in via phone, thank you. I appreciate it. Those who inbox me and DM me on Instagram and Facebook, love y'all as well. If you're listening to the playback, big ups to you. But before I get out of here, I just want to say meet me here tomorrow, next time, same time, same place, or whatever. And also, I'm going to leave y'all with my thought of the night, and my thought of the night is this. It is okay to stumble. It is even okay to trip. It is even okay to fall. But don't stay down too long, because in staying down, you will never make progress to your next level of goal in your life. So trip, stumble, fall, whatever you need to do, don't stay down. Get up, dust yourself off, and keep it pushing, because only then will you meet your goal that's in the horizon. With that being said, love, peace, and blessings. Pray before you lay. I love y'all, and good night.